This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
From the nation's capital, this is the Fly Fishing Consultant Podcast with your host, Rob Snowett.
This is the 230th episode of the Fly Fishing Consultant Podcast. My name is Rob Snowwhite, and this is part two of my day trip in the Cotswolds with Andy Gray from AndyGrayFlyFishing.com. In this part of the podcast, Andy takes me down some winding roads, and I'm on what I consider the driver's side. So when all these cars are coming at us on these little blind turns, I'm reaching for the brake, and it's not there. Again, I had white knuckles. So Andy takes me to a still water, which was crystal clear, had little bridges built on to the islands, and had little casting platforms just to get you out a little bit further. We were sight casting a rising trout. Buzzers were coming off. The wind would pick up. The wind would die. I finally got my chance to fish a jig fly, and I ended up breaking off trout. This is my first chance ever to experience blue rainbow trout. So this is part two of the Fly Fishing Consultant Podcast goes to London, out to the Cotswolds outside Oxford. And I told you how Andy works in the music industry. Well, he's friends with the obscure band Gold Rush that I use for my introduction music. How's that for a small world? Hope you all enjoy this one. Next podcast, we're going to the London Fly Fishing Fair.
Okay. So we're just coming out of the River Colne Valley now. The Colne is another tributary of the Thames. We're going to drop back down into the Windrush Valley, which is further east, which is another Thames tributary, and we're going to climb up and then drop down into the Evenlow Valley, which is the third tributary. And all these, we're moving kind of east all the time, so we're getting basically closer to London as we move. As I say, you'll see the difference in the rivers and the quality of the water on the rivers as we move further east. And we saw the Leach. The Leach is actually a tributary of the Thames as well, a very small one, as is the Colne. And you've seen the Windrush, you've seen the quality of the water in there. Then we're going to go and see the Evenlow, and you can see the difference. As we move further east, it gets worse. But conversely, as we move further west, fishing really improves. a lot of small streams around here, which don't get fished a lot, but they all hold wild trout. There's so many of them in this area. But, you know, creeks, as you'd call them, and really, really small rivers. We're going to go back across the Leach in a minute, which is where you jumped out to a bus photographs earlier.
Yeah. How long did it take you just to find your way around?
Well, I'd say, you know, about 20 years ago, I was fishing 4 or 5 days a week.
Because all these buildings, like, they are made of the same material. They kind of all blend in.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, I remember the swan from earlier. So we would have a mirror over here on these turns so you can see when a car's coming.
You do sometimes, but not. The government don't put them up.
Do cars ever go through these houses?
Not that often. You know, most people are pretty aware of driving around here.
My wife would be grabbing the dashboard every 5 seconds and going,
Yeah, there's a bit of an art to driving around these small lanes.
Yeah, this is absolutely majestic right there.
I think that's just absolutely lovely, isn't it? Full of fish, absolutely full of fish, and a really, really good environment for them.
So you've done GTs, you've been in Mexico. Are there other bucket fish species you want to catch?
I've not caught a permit yet, but very few people have. I've had a few shots. What's next? Tuna, I think. I've caught false albacore, which is part of the tuna family. Caught quite a few of those of the Caribbean. But, no, I think I just wanted... The saltwater thing is... It's really addictive, you know, it's really addictive. And I just want to spend more time bone fishing and refining my bone fishing and my fish spotting. Because that, I find, is the most rewarding part of it. You know, to actually see a bone fish and get the fly in the right place.
Living here and then going to the tropics is... You really have to worry about the sun?
Yeah. Yeah, you cover up a lot. I mean, I'm out a lot in the summer, so... You know, I build up a hobby. I'm not very good on the birds of prey. But no, you tend to build up quite a tan over the summer. You know, all day.
Yeah, one of my neighbours about 2 weeks ago commented how pale I was looking.
That'll change.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, as far as fishing destinations, I want to go back to the Indian Ocean again. But it is expensive. Whereas, you know, Mexico, you can do it reasonably cheaply. Like I said, that trip I did in January, I did a DIY, just a friend and I went out there. And we had a great time, and the satisfaction of catching your first fish solo, you know, without a guide, is just immense. You know, because as you know, I mean, as a guide yourself, you're catching fish for people a lot of the time. You know, they might be holding a rod, but you're catching the fish for them.
Is that the imminent collision warning?
It's just there's a stall indicator.
that one guy running was pretty brave.
Yeah. We have a lot of roads like this, all little country roads around here. Climb up a little bit up to what's basically a crest, back through Burford into Windrush Valley, and then back out of Burford into the Ivanhoe Valley.
pigeons are huge here.
Yeah, a lot of pigeons about. And they breed 2 or 3 times a year now.
That's one bird you don't really see in fly time. There's so much iridescence on them.
I know, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's, and they're so common as well, you know?
Yeah. The amount of starlings we have, I think those would be more popular. Some really thick brush.
Yeah. Well, this will just go bang green in about a month's time.
Do you have clients that bring their own flies they want to try, and you look at them and you're like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you can try it, but...
But normally, someone will turn up, you know, if I've got a river client, they might turn up with a fly box and there might be something in there, but normally they're much too big. You know, they've bought a job lot of flies, you know, river flies from a shop or something, or a pack of flies, and they're normally just big, massive size 10s and 12s and stuff like that. They go way overdressed. That's the biggest bugbear is overly dressed flies. Because you look at the natural insects, they're slim, they're thin, you know. They're not big, hairy things.
Did Frank Sawyer, was he out here?
He was further down south on the Avon. The Avon, there are about four river Avons in the UK. It's the Southern River Avon, which he was the river keeper on.
This is a really pretty stretch. Yeah. I just bought up some of his imitation killer bug yarn.
Oh, the Shetland
oyster.
471 or whatever it's called.
Yeah, stuff is... I've seen it on eBay for about $100 for maybe a couple
of years. For an original card, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've fished the stretch of river quite a few times, which he was a river keeper on. And there's, I think there's a picture on my Facebook of me sat on Frank Sawyer's bench. The killer bug was basically called the killer bug because he used to kill every grayling he caught. And funny enough, very first time I ever went river fishing was on the River Tweed in Scotland, a place called Melrose. Tweed's known as a salmon river, but it's got a good head of trout and grayling as well. And bought a day ticket. Well, my father bought me a day ticket because I was about 12, I think. And it had the rules on it, you know, what the fly size you could use, upstream only, all this sort of thing. And the very last rule was all grayling to be killed.
That's a rule?
That was a rule.
Wow.
Yeah.
Things have changed.
Well, salmon fishermen always used to think that grayling ain't bees, salmon eggs. So, you know, why would you want a grayling in the river, in a salmon river? Because it's destroying the grayling, or it's destroying the salmon, rather. So again, they were persecuted and seen as a bit of a pest. There's been a big explosion in grayling fishing in the UK, you know, because people have seen them as a very, very worthy game fish. And also, you can extend your season, because when the trout season finishes, the grayling season is still in effect. So that river we were just on, it's closed for 18 days every year, and then it's open for the rest of the year. The river seasons do vary. The season in, for instance, in Wales, starts, I think, the 14th of March. So the Welsh rivers are open now. Whereas it's 1st of April here.
When do you use the two-pronged hooks? Is that mostly for salmon?
Doubles, yes. It's a salmon and sea trout. Normally always a double.
Is that just to help them really jump?
It's just a better hookup. You don't use doubles for trout. Use for trebles now. People don't really use trebles for salmon anymore. Few people do. All the salmon fishing I've done has always been the doubles.
How far do you have to go to get to salmon?
Well, the nearest salmon fishing to here is the the River Wye, which is west, probably about 40 miles away. Salmon fishing in the UK, it really is in decline. I mean, Scotland had a terrible season last year, but that may bounce back. You know, it's very cyclical.
Yeah.
I say the Thames used to have a massive salmon run, you know, 200-300 years ago.
But, you know, they're coming back into the Seine, Paris.
Yeah.
I read an article a couple of years ago.
Well, say you'll get the odd bait fisherman who will catch a salmon in the Thames. In fact, there's a very small river further north of here in Warwickshire called the River Stour, which is a really interesting river. And it's absolutely full of trout. It doesn't really get fish for trout that much. A lot of bait fishermen, though. It's another shot there.
I love the signs.
Yeah.
It's painted.
But there's a guy there who I know is a good friend of mine who's a bait fisherman. And he's the one who actually told me there were trout in the river. So I fished it quite a bit. I said, what's the biggest trout you've caught? And he said, I caught a massive great thing once.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So how big was it? He said, it was about a 2 foot long fish, you know, maybe two and a half foot long. And he said, but it was really skinny and really black. And I said, okay. Did it have a big hook on the lower jaw? And he went, yeah, really big hook on the lower jaw. So that wasn't a trout. I said, you caught a salmon there. No. Did you?
What was the name of that little village?
That's Burford. There's a lot of towns with Ford in the name because it obviously means water crossing. Burford's the crossing for the Windrush. Fairford is the crossing for the Colne. So we're now heading up the hill and we're going into the Evenlode Valley. Well, we're coming out of the Windrush Valley. Over into the Evenlode Valley.
So that looked like a new building that was made to look old.
Yeah, the building regulations mean any new building has to be built out of the Cotswold stone. Yeah, to try and keep everything looking nice and, you know, conforming with what the traditional look was. And you start to see a change in the colour, particularly the older buildings. As we get more towards Chipping Norton, they become lighter and a more buttery colour, which is because, you know, as the stone changes, because the stone to build these buildings out of would have been quarried, you know, within half a mile of where they're built, you know, because when they're built 300-400 years ago, they wouldn't have carried the stone very far. And it does change in colour as you move around through the Cotswolds. So we're coming up to what is the highest part of Oxfordshire now. You'll see on the right hand side there's a little very low sort of hill which is the highest point in Oxfordshire, just over to a little village called Leithfield over to the right.
Nobody rides bicycles out here, do they?
You get quite a few cyclists. Leisure cycling is just really big now, you know. It's been a big explosion in it. I mean, the British did quite well in a few cycling events over the last few years, and it's really what we call Wimbledon effect, you know.
week after Wimbledon, everyone goes out and buys a tennis racket.
My wife, growing up, her and her twin brother would watch Wimbledon and then just go play tennis all day.
Yeah.
I can't play tennis, so I don't want to play against my wife. She would probably hurt me. It's a lot of black chickens.
Yeah.
I wonder if those are breast chickens.
I don't know. Chickens.
I've never seen just a field of, like, a field of cows, but chickens. Just all just walking around happy, heavy birds.
Free-range chickens.
Yeah. When I went to Paris, I couldn't believe how different chicken tasted. Everything we eat is just so mass-produced and just gross.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends hunt. They don't want to eat antibiotic, hormone-filled grossness.
No, I mean, it was so... Again, there's a big movement in the UK now for real sort of free-range, naturally grown food.
There's so much estrogen in our river. All the male fish have eggs.
Yeah.
From the, not just from women on birth control, but all the stuff they pump into the cows to make them produce more milk.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. And it just lactate, yeah.
Yeah, it just, they piss and it all goes into the Potomac, and you cut open a male fish and it'll have eggs in it.
Right, this is the Evenrode Valley we're dropping into now.
It looks like a tweed coat.
Yeah. Patchwork quilt.
There's the
forest. Really buttery colour now. It's really lighting up. Let's go to a trout fishery. Let's get you wet in the line.
So even like a small creek,
yeah,
just have fish in it. They just end up there.
They will probably run up there to spawn. A lot of those are what we call winter borns, so they're dry in the summer. They're just basically just water coming off the hills, generally in the winter, running into the river down that way. We're going to cross over the Evenrode in a bit. We're properly in the Cotswolds now. Oxford's not Cotswold, because it doesn't sit on that stone, even though all the buildings in Oxford are built from, university buildings are built from the limestone. Oxford's mainly on clay and something else, I can't remember what.
That looked like a bird of prey that got hit.
Yeah.
Now in America, if you were to take a feather from that, you'd go to jail.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can't even touch them. We have the Migratory Bird Act now. Have you read The Feather Thief?
No.
The guy who broke into the Tring Museum to steal Wallace's birds to sell on eBay.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah.
He'd buy the guy's a nerd. He did it to buy a $20,000 flute. But it goes through the whole history of the feather craze with hats and just how all the American birds were decimated 150 years ago. And it's the, I think it might be the Migratory Bird Act, but you can't even touch some birds.
So many of these little villages in the Cotswolds.
Little itty-bitty doors.
Yeah.
People are just tinier.
I just think they're stupid. That always used to be the thing, wasn't it? People were shorter in the old days, so the doors were like, I just think they just made them small, really. Didn't mind ducking their heads to get in.
This is sort of similar to rural Virginia, where I'm from.
Yeah.
It's kind of rolling green hills. But it's a lot of horse country. A lot of Hollywood actors have houses and raise horses.
There you go. So this is the Evenrode. Can I jump out and take a photo?
No.
Just a little.
We'll keep going. I don't know if I could open a door here. It's so narrow.
And that's a river which isn't in great condition, really, because it's been pretty heavily dredged. You know, farmers have dredged it to try and stop the flooding of the surrounding floodplain, and the effect that it's just ruined the habitat. It's slowed the flow of a river down, so it's become more turbid, it's silted up, you know. It is.
Do you fish much? Grasshoppers, beetles, ants?
Fish ants quite late season, quite a lot. That can be a very, very good pattern. We do get grasshoppers, crickets, but it tends to be only a couple of days in the season where the fish are really switched on to them. But it's always good to have a few patterns in your box. But ants are a good pattern. If you get a hatch of flying ants, then you know the fish just go absolutely crazy for them. You know, plus it's a good terrestrial pattern. You know a fly called a cocky bondi?
Never heard of a cocky bondi.
It's a terrestrial, it's a beetle pattern basically.
Oh, there's some crazy bikers.
Yeah.
That is quite the view.
It's lovely, isn't it?
I don't ever get to experience something like that.
It's the best office in the world.
Are there any sort of celebrity fly anglers out here or in the UK? Or like notable ones that can draw a crowd for speaking engagements?
There's probably the best known is a guy called Charles Jardine, who will probably be at the fly fishing show you go to. He's pretty well known. He's a journalist. He's a very evangelical fly fisherman. Does a lot of stuff with kids, fishing for schools and that sort of thing. He's a good guy. He's a good artist as well. You know, paints pictures of trout and stuff like that. Apart from him, there's a couple of reasonably well-known reservoir fishermen. A guy called Craig Barr, who's got his own fly business. And you know, and then you've got a guy called John Horsley, who is a bit of an all-round fisherman. Mainly still waters, does a lot of guiding for pike on Rutland Water, which is a big trout fishery with a lot of pike in it. But I'd say Jardine's probably one of the best known as a crop at the moment. We haven't really got anyone really big at the moment in writing, you know, like a Goddard or anyone like that. You know, they all seem to be the previous generation. No one's really coming through, which is a shame. But, you know, there's quite a lot of the famous people fly fish. You know, Eric Clapton's a big fly fisherman.
He caught that huge salmon a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
We could have been driving in circles for the last 20 minutes. I really wouldn't know.
It just all looks the same, doesn't it, to get used to it.
Yeah, there's another one.
That's mine.
And that looks like scum, maybe.
Yeah, it might be.
So I know the Cotswolds from, like, people go out with their walking stick and their socks and a little knapsack. Is that a seasonal thing? Like, not right now?
Yeah, you get a big bump in tourists in the summer.
I saw a sign that said no walkers.
Yeah. It's a big old destination for Cotswolds, you know, because it is so, so pretty. And there's quite a big tourist business that's been built around that, you know, very, you know, traditional hotels and pubs and stuff, you know, that really, really play on that whole thing.
There's one thing I can never have enough of, and that's pheasant tails.
Well, if we see one on the road, jump out and
yeah.
Plunkett.
Pheasant tails for steel. Have you ever done steelhead?
Yes.
I saw you did the rogue.
Yeah.
So we do the Great Lakes. And it's seven-hour drive maybe, and a flashback soft hackle pheasant tail always get you a big fish.
I was surprised to have, you know, big nymphs. You know, like
I'm using like eights.
Yeah. Go and fish down in Mexico. Look up a guy called Rex Schroeder. He's an American guy, lives down in Tulum. And boy, he's a character. He's a real character. Great guy. He does a lot of guiding for mainly on oceans, sort of surf fishing for jacks and snook. Very funny guy. Really good character. Gives you a bit.
So where are we pulling into now?
Right. We're going to go. This is Salford Trout Lakes. And it's two stock trout lakes. We're going to go to the upper one first, have a quick look at that, see if it's worth fishing. If it doesn't look worth fishing, we're going to go to the lower one.
What are you going to be looking for?
We're going to be just seeing if there's any surface activity, any fish moving about, any fish shoaled up. You know, just basically have a look and see if there's any insect life coming off and the fish are feeding. It's early season, they're normally fairly hungry at this time. It can be relatively easy to catch. The two lakes, the upper lake, this is a place I bring a lot of people to. It's very good for experienced and novice fishermen. It's not a big water, so it's not very intimidating. You don't necessarily need to cast that far. It's pretty well stocked. It's got rainbows, blues, browns, the odd tiger trout.
Blue trout. Yeah. I just read about that in that magazine. What is a blue trout?
Blue trout is a genetically modified rainbow. Don't ask me how, but it basically gives it a blue sheen, and they tend to be a bit more aggressive and fight harder. It's like one of these hybrids, you know, like a tiger trout is a cross between a brook and a brown. Then there's a few others as well.
Do you have what we call palominos?
Not by that name.
They're like the creamsicle, orangey...
golden trout, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you get a few fisheries stock those.
So Pennsylvania and West Virginia, I think they're now in Colorado, which they really shouldn't be. That place should still be kind of pure... Good thing you got this car.
Yeah, you've got to have a 4x4 if you're going fishing around here, especially in the winter.
Everyone seems to have very large nets.
Hopefully for very large fish. Right, I'll be going to sign us in. Give me a second and I'll be back.
Okay. Heard that.
Thank you.
You take a look in your net there. I've heard about the blue trout. I want to see one.
No.
Just regular rainbow?
That's not one. That's a rainbow, yeah. I've caught a blue trout, but I put it back. There's one, so you can actually, they're quite easy to spot in the water, actually, to be honest, when you do see them, but of course, when you're fishing like us, we stand around for 3 hours because that's what we're doing. If you're just here to have a good look at them, then you'll get a bit bored after a bit, won't you? But yeah, there's one or two around. There's no shortage of fish.
Well, that's the plan. I wouldn't mind catching one while I'm here. Good, try and find some trout. How are you rigging up your rod?
Okay, so it's 9'6" weight. It's Sage Z-axis. Lovely rod. I had this built from a blank by a really good rod builder called Stephen Parks, who now runs a company called Atom 6. Watch out for their rods. They're really, really good casting tools. It's probably London Fly Fishing Fair, actually. Floating line. It's the Michael Evans Arrowhead line. I don't know if you've got those across the pond, but they're really good lines. Very, very long taper and really true to weight as well. You can hold a really stable loop
and you can get a lot of line outside the rod tip to keep the cast really stable with these things.
Are you all particular about your line colours at all?
I tend to find something reasonably neutral. I mean, this is what's called an ivory colour, I guess, of a cream colour. I don't tend to like to use really bright lines, but I'm not really too sure. You know, if you look at any line in,
especially the against the sky,
it's always going to look dark. So, you know. I do have a few brown sort of dun coloured lines on lighter rods, but they're very, very difficult to fish on a floating line because you just lose sight of the line completely. So I think what you might gain from stealth, you're going to lose through your ability to control the line.
What sort of pattern do you want to start off with here?
We're just going to put a damsel on, weighted damsel, fairly standard pattern. We're going to use about a 9-foot leader. I've got a 9-foot tapered leader cut down to 7 foot, which is going to do a loop-to-loop connection down to some 4X tippet. So total lead length about between 9 and 10 foot. And then we're going to put a damsel loop on it. Fairly good standard go-to pattern. Stanley, come here. So I'm just going to replace the tippet on this. Just a straightforward shop-bought nylon tapered leader. I mean, I actually buy these things by the two dozen. I pay about £1 per leader, you know, because I get through so many. You know, nothing really special or secret about the composition of leader. Stanley, come here. Stan, come here.
Was that a fish that just flew out of the water?
Yeah.
He really is smiling.
Oh yeah, he's a happy dog.
Would that fish just been leaping to grab something or clean gills or just for fun?
I don't know, let's see if we can catch him from it. So we're not going to go too heavy duty on the tippet. We're going to go for 4X, which is probably about right. You should be fine with that. You know how to play a fish. I use Stroff GTM, really good tippet material, just nylon, not fluorocarbon. And I'm just going to do, we've got a loop at the end of a tapered leader. It's going to tie a perfection loop in this end on the tippet. And then just do a normal sort of handshake connection.
That guy's on a connection. Oh no, it looked like he was on a fish.
Right, fly wise. Bring out the still water box here.
Can I take a picture?
Yep.
I really wish I had brought you some of my damsels. I'll have to mail you some.
I have a bunch
somewhere. Are there any products that you, from say America or I don't know, Korea, Japan, that are hard for people in the UK to get? Tie materials?
No, we can get pretty much everything here. Pretty much everything. Right, so we'll go for a damsel with a blue flash in it. Stanley, come here. Come here, come on. And we're just going to go for a pretty standard 5-turn tuck grinner.
You said you signed in?
Yeah.
Is that like to keep a log of who's been here?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a membership of this place through my fly fishing club. Stanley, come here. Come in, come in.
Do you ever have problems with riffraff coming in and causing trouble?
Not generally, no. But just keep an eye on that central patch of water. Basically, about 60 feet out, look towards that platform over there and then come back and about 60 feet away from where we are now. Look in that area there. And what we're doing, we're just looking for any surface disturbances. When we haven't got very good light conditions, as we have, you know, as in today, then we're really relying on the fish giving their position away through surface activity. I mean, we saw a fish move there and we saw a fish move just further up. I mean, I know from experience that this area off this platform here generally holds fish. There's a bit of a ridge that runs. You can just see that slightly lighter patch
yep.
over there, and it gets a little bit deeper. And the fish patrol around. They'll also come into this corner here.
where the fish, again, we've got the just a floating line. You see it shells off.
Wow, this is really clear.
Yeah. Stanley, come around here. This side. Good boy.
This almost looks like it has an artificial dye to it.
It's got a slight green tinge to it, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not complicated. Right, so all I do, I mean, you're going to be fishing, not me, is let that fly sink, count it down for about 5 seconds, and then just pluck retrieve like that. 1, 2, 3, stop. 1, 2, 3, stop. See if you pick anything up on that. You're going to find with this long marabou tail that occasionally they'll pluck at the back end of the fly. If you feel a fish pull on it, don't lift into it. Just wait till it goes all goes tight. So it's almost like a strip strike. We've not got a hugely strong leader on here, so you're going to have to play him on the rules.
So, Andy, how did the fishing go this afternoon?
A bit slow. Had a couple of hookups, but nothing really stuck. Wasn't too much surface movement. We had the air pressure was bouncing up and down quite a bit. And noticeably, when we had a rise in the air pressure, we saw more fish rising. Tricky day. The damsel, which we started off with, I think you had a couple of pulls on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fish weren't really taking confidently on that. So a smaller fly, a bit more interest in that. But again, not really very confident takes. Bit of interest. You had quite a few follows. But again, nothing really confident and nothing hooking up. Well, we did see some surface activity. I think it's probably very, very small midges that they were taking. They were taking just subsurface with a few surface rises as well. So I think if we'd have stuck around for a bit longer, we could have probably cracked it a bit more with the right fly on there. But yeah, I mean, a nice day out. Tricky.
It was pretty.
Yeah.
Very clean. No litter. Not thinking about the fish probably get eaten by those crayfish instead of the crayfish getting eaten by the fish. Those, I mean, just the head of the crayfish with the claws was like 6 or 7 inches long.
Yeah, I mean, a crayfish wouldn't take a trout.
The dead ones probably get eaten.
Yeah, but they would certainly graze on any dead fish. You know, and on a fishery like that, you do have a mortality rate. So, you know, you see dead fish at the bottom occasionally, and they will be hoovered up very rapidly by the crayfish. But there's so many invertebrates in that lake, in those two lakes, that the crayfish are getting very large. I mean, I think I said about there are crayfish in pretty much every watercourse in the UK now. They're the invasive American crayfish, which were brought over here for, you know, to be cultivated back in the 60s, and they've just spread. And the negative effect of that is they do eat a lot of the invertebrates, and the fly life is going down in a lot of rivers, partly because of the crayfish, partly because of pollution and pesticides, etc. One of the plus sides on that is that when trout, and we have a fish called a chub, when they start to recognise a crayfish as food, then they start eating them, and they're very, very high protein. So the size of chub in a lot of rivers has just absolutely doubled over the last 5 to 10 years. You know, when I was younger and fishing, any chub over 4 pounds was fish of a lifetime, and people are regularly catching 5, 6, 7 pound chub now.
And that's a big fish.
Do
you ever fish that they're like egg patterns to mimic the chubs and the other coarse fish?
Well, I do a lot of fly fishing for coarse fish, and the most common ones, I mean, I fish for pike a lot, and you also catch perch as well. But if you fly fish for chub, then a really good pattern for chub is a big grey wolf, you know, a large dry fly pattern just floated down underneath a tree, and these fish will just come up for them. Chub are great fish to catch on the fly. They're not particularly fast, but they're quite powerful. You have to fish reasonably like tippets because they're quite sensitive to tippet. So they're difficult fish to play. You've got to fish quite a soft rod with them. Otherwise, you will get smashed up by them quite easily, because what they lack in speed, they make up for in strength and lunges, you know. And they'll just give a big head shake. And they will always go for snags as well.
Are there any flies you wouldn't fish out here? Like, that's embarrassing?
We tend to be... We, as I say, the English tend to be quite conservative about fly fishing, and streamer fishing, as we talked about, isn't really practiced very much.
What about glow bugs and eggs?
Well, more and more...
San Juan worm?
People are starting to use those and Chernobyl ants and things like that, you know? And boundaries are starting to be broken down about people's views on what we should, what we can fish and what we should fish. So, yeah, people are opening their eyes a little bit more to fishing non-traditional patterns. Though, you know, some
of this car that drove off the road.
Yeah.
That car, they really did a number on this one.
What happened though? I've seen these skid marks.
It looks like, you know, it's some movie like where a monster just threw it down in there.
Yeah. But we have on the rivers we were looking at, they don't really have too many rules. You can fish upstream, downstream, dry fly, nymph, sweat fly, whatever. On a lot of the southern chalk streams, they're still very traditional, and a lot of them you can only fish dry fly up to a certain time in the season. You can only fish single fly. You have to fish upstream. You can't fish a fly bigger than a size 10 outside mayfly season, when you can go up to an 8 if you want.
Who regulates that?
It's the rules of the club or the syndicate or the water. As far as who polices it, then it's self-policing, but you'll find a lot of these more expensive chalk stream beats are quite heavily bailiffed. So, you know, you'll have a river keeper. He'll keep an eye on things, and anything he doesn't like the look of, you know, you could be in trouble.
Anything else about your guide business and fishing here that we didn't discuss yet?
I think what I'm trying to do is really trying to expand the whole fly fishing, perception of fly fishing, for not just trout, but moving, you know, grayling, coarse fish, carp, you know, and really trying to give people, tell people there are so many more options on what you can actually catch on the fly. As we know, you can catch anything with fins on a fly. A lot of people don't actually realise that.
What is that building?
That's Bliss Mill. It used to be an old woolen mill. It's now private flats. It's lovely, isn't it?
Goodness. Yeah, so if it swims, you're going to chase it.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, of course, I mean, I've caught a very bizarre fish to catch on a fly. I've caught a tench on a fly, which is a very odd fish to catch, because they are not predatory at all, and quite tricky to catch if you're bait fishing. So that was a bit of a surprise catch. But, I mean, my big things really, outside trout and grayling, are carp and pike, which are... A lot, you know, there's a lot of carp fisheries in the UK, and pretty much every river and a lot of still waters have pike in them, and they can get pretty big as well. You know, you stand, if you go pike fishing, you stand a good chance of catching a 20-pound fish.
That's big.
A lot of fun. The way that they strike, you know, if you see a pike strike, you know, the gills just flare, the mouth just hinges open, you know. And they just explode to go for your fly. As you know, they're predatory. They're ambush predators. So, you know, they move really quickly. And just where... If you look at a pike, you know, same as a muskie, you've got that dorsal fin right at the back of the body. And that's just to give it that big single burst of acceleration. You know, a big flick of a tail and a dorsal fin. And these things just hang out where you fly. A lot of fun to fish for. And again, something that's relatively in its infancy. Pike are very delicate fish. You know, they've got this sort of fearsome reputation because they are voracious predators, but they don't stand being caught too many times. They don't stand being badly handled.
I live in Fairfax. Fairfax and
Company.
Yeah? Named after Lord Fairfax.
Oh, right, okay.
All right, you ready for some non-fishing questions?
Yep.
Favorite Michael Caine movie?
The Man Who Would Be King.
The best sandwich you've ever eaten?
Oh, God. There used to be a garage just around the corner from here that made a really, really good tomato and egg salad sandwich.
That sounds good. What's the worst place you've ever fished?
Worst place I've ever fished? You know what? That's a tricky one to answer because I've loved everywhere I've fished.
If you could go back in time before humans ruined environments and destroyed things, you could fish in one place, where would it be?
I'd like to catch a salmon in the Thames. Because we don't get salmon in the Thames anymore. Well, we don't get a salmon run in the Thames. You get occasional salmon in there. But I'd like to be able to catch a salmon out of the Thames.
Do you have a favourite author?
Very keen on Terry Pratchett at the moment. Reading a lot of his books. And who else do I like? Very British, P.G. Woodhouse.
Do you have any irrational phobias?
Fingernails.
People clipping them or like fingernail injuries?
No, just fingernails. Okay. You know, it's like stuff under your fingernails. Right. Not dirt, but like, you know. Just one of those things that makes your teeth, puts your teeth on edge, fingernails.
What's something you refuse to eat?
Cucumber.
Pickles too?
No, I love pickled gherkins, but I hate cucumber. Bizarre. My wife can't understand it.
If you left one item at home on a fishing trip that would ruin your day, what would it be?
My glasses. Because I wouldn't be able to see to tie flies on.
Okay, that's probably all the random questions I can think of. I usually have a
good
list.
Ones, actually.
Yeah, I have a list. How about hot dogs? You put ketchup or mustard on them?
Mustard.
All right. That's it. Where can we find you on social media? How can people hire you for a day?
Okay, I'm andygrayflyfishing.com, and it's Andy Gray spelt with an E. If you do a search for that, or if you do a search for fly fishing in the Cotswolds, I'll come up pretty high on any Google search on that.
So I found you.
Brilliant.
Okay, thank Al.
It works
then.
That.
Absolutely. Well, this was a pretty awesome day.
Good.
I really had a good time.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad I got a chance to show you around and have a look at some of the fishing we do in the UK.
Yeah.
We looked at some rivers and we looked at some still waters and a big reservoir. So, you know, hopefully it's given you a bit of an appetite to come back over rod next time.
Is Stanley tired?
Stanley is absolutely on his knees at the moment, but he's had a lovely day as well.
Fantastic. All right, Andy, thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for the Fly Fishing Consultant Podcast. For more information or to contact Rob, please go to www.robsnowwhite.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Freestone Productions at freestoneproductions.com.